all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
On this Friday morning, February 16th, 2024, nice to have you along on a cold morning across Wisconsin and on the Civic Media Radio Network. Mark Jacob will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Dan Schumacher, before we wrap things up, we'll be talking a little bit of weekend sports. Brittany Merlot normally joins us at this time. She's getting an early start to the weekend, so I'm just going to tell you that it's going to be breezy and cold, but seasonal to start the week. Seasonal feels cold to us now. The coldest temperatures should be tonight before we start warming back up again. Could be back in the 30s, the 40s, maybe beyond within the next few days here. Forecasts all throughout the day here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Right before the break, Greg Bogdan in Waukesha and I here in Chippewa Falls, we're talking about fish fries, this being the first Friday of Lent. And before I lost track of the time here, I was about to ask if you had a favorite place to go for fish fries. I've mentioned several times there's a restaurant right across the bridge here from me on Lake Wissota called The Edge that has just amazing fried fish. But you have a favorite spot as well.
Oh, I do. I used to work there. Well, I still kind of work there. But one that I still very much love is the one at Lakefront Brewery. It's very, very good. Trying to see if there's I don't know if Klinger's is still around in Milwaukee, but Klinger's at least had an amazing fish fry. And then also, what was the name? On the Clock has one as well. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rob again reminds us of Rachel's Roadside near Wittenberg. Thank you for that, Rob. And he also tells us in Tigerton, it is 12 degrees with a wind chill of 3 above, partly cloudy. Happy Daytona 500 weekend with a big race on Sunday.
Thanks
for the reminder of that. Temperatures, I did not mention them before, did I? Because they're quite a range. Down by Greg, it's 19 in Waukesha and 23 in Madison. Oshkosh is at 20. Wisconsin Rapids, 15. La Crosse, 21. Green Bay, 19. You're like, wait, is he going south to north this time? Yeah, for dramatic effect. In Wausau, it's 10. Here on Lake Wissota, it's 12. Hayward is at 8. And Park Falls is at 6 below. It is below zero in parts up north here as we head into a weekend that actually feels like February, which is really weird. We had, like I said, about 3 inches of snow here yesterday morning. And like a dummy, I went out to shovel some of it, knowing full well the sun was going to come out and we have a south-facing asphalt driveway. But the snow plow had come through. And you know about snow plows and you know what they put at the end of your driveway.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I'll at least push that out of the way. The whole time reminding myself that on the last snowfall of the year last year, back in March, I threw my back out. And I'm just thinking, oh, be careful, be careful. So finally, when I got the stuff from the snowplow out of the way, I just stopped. I'm like, hopefully this will melt. If it doesn't, and if it freezes, I'm going to be mad. But by the end of the day, totally black driveway. I didn't actually have to push any of it. But I got some exercise, so I got that going for me.
Yeah.
Risking throwing my back out. But I'll take it. I'll take the applause. I will take it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. Roger is telling us that Holder Bridge Bar and Grill outside of Moe's and E has excellent fish. Why am I blanking on the place where I went in Green Bay? It's like the place to get fish fry in Green Bay. I went with Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg and Kristen Lyerly and some others. You have to look at it twice to make sure you're pronouncing it correctly. Somebody will tell me.
Is it Marique's? Because,
yes, it's Marique's. Oh, I had that last year and it was so good. Good. I hadn't had a perch fish fry in forever, and it was amazing. So, yes, that's the place to go. I am so used to mentioning the phone number off the top of the show, and I don't typically mention it here.
You are just so confabulated today. I'm loving it.
I know. Somebody's going on vacation.
I know.
Vacation Britain. That's the funny thing. Here, wait.
Okay.
One thing at a time.
All right.
I was giving the phone number. 844-967-2789. Where's a great fish fry? Recommend a fish fry place. want to hear them, or text it. We'll read it off the text line as well. What was I saying? Oh, discombobulated. Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers sounds like, and you said this, somebody that does not want to be there when you listen to his post-game stuff. You know? So you think I sound a little like, I don't know, I'm not here. I'm already looking ahead. He's blaming his players last night, saying, oh, they're focused on the All-Star break. You're the coach. Get them to stop focusing on it.
Yeah, I mean, he just, every time he does an interview, and sorry, Joe Zepecki, sorry, Luke Mathers, sorry, Dan Schaefer, sorry, every Bucks fan we talk to here. But from an outsider, man, it just seems like this guy is, like, he's
mailing it in.
It's like he's got a phone. And he put a phone on top of the phone, and he's calling the phone on top of the phone, and that bottom phone is picking up. He's double phoning it in. I mean,
oh, I like that.
He doesn't sound like he really wants to be there at all.
Yeah, look, he sounds like somebody who's doing analysis in the booth, which is what he's been doing, and he is good at saying, "Here's what's happening." But you're the coach; you have to fix what is happening, and that is what's not happening with the coach right now, which I wasn't going to talk about till later, but then you mentioned discombobulated. I immediately got off track of asking people where their favorite fish fry is. I'm looking at comments on Facebook, realizing that when we were talking about the history of the Billboard Hot 100, Roger properly notes that there's a book out there called the Billboard Book of Top 40 Hits. The Top 40 is based on the Hot 100. And it's written by Joel Whitburn. He's been writing these books for decades.
Yeah.
And Roger writes, Joel Whitburn's Billboard Book of Top 40 Hits is my musical dictionary. I still have the first one that I bought in the mid to late 90s. And we used to, in the newsroom, a bunch of us of a certain age, so we all grew up listening to the same songs together. And we would just open that book randomly. I still have it. It's down in the basement someplace now. I don't want to try to go through the storeroom and find it right now. But we would just grab something like, Dexy's Midnight Runners. And not only would somebody else have to shout out, come on, Eileen, but they would nail down, they would say like, March 1984. And we'd be looking at it and we'd go, son of a gun, March of 1984. Chris Earle was our sportscaster. He's now a newscaster in Florida. He was uncanny for being able to peg when it was on the charts. I wasn't bad myself, but he was a savant.
You know, in the before, when you were talking about being such a radio geek and writing things down, I didn't think you could take it up another notch. You were the kind of kids who never got in trouble, were you? Like, you were always on time.
Yes, we were.
Please, yep. Thank you.
Yep.
Ma'am,
never
sir.
Never got detention.
No.
Yep. Nope. That's not how we rolled.
Pat's
we
such
were
a good
the
model
nerds.
Student. I wish most of the kids were like Pat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look where that got me. Oh, wait. I'm actually doing okay.
I was going to say.
I'm not going to complain. In news and other news, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, remember how he was proposing a rather discombobulated, that's our word of the day, marijuana legalization plan? Like, it was going to be medicinal, but there were going to be these restrictions. And I mean, he managed to cheese off people both for and against marijuana legalization because it was so convoluted.
The state-run stores.
Yeah, the state-run stores. So yesterday he said, the bill's probably not going to pass. To which an entire state said, duh.
Yeah.
You knew
Wisconsin's
from the beginning.
One big shrug emoji.
Yes. Because that's his move. Yeah. That's his move is every session, every year, he says, this is going to be the year we're going to listen to the 70-80% of the people who think marijuana should be legalized like every other state around us. And then, like Lucy, he pulls the football back.
Yep.
And it doesn't happen. So that was our one story there, that marijuana legalization not happening.
And when people get on his case about it and be like, why did you legalize marijuana? And now he gets to say, well, I tried.
That's the thing. It's all CYA at this point. Next week, Chad Holmes will be here on Monday and Tuesday, Todd Alba Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So they already have several great guests lined up. We will have our homeroom segment on Wednesday with Todd that we do with our friends from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, because there's an election on Tuesday, not everywhere, but any place that needs a primary election. And there are some school districts that will have referendums on the ballot. Now, there are already 90 some school districts that are going to referendum. Almost all of them are going to be on April 2nd, but there are some that are next week. Earlier, we talked to school officials from Cumberland and Menominee, but there's also school referendums on the ballot next Tuesday in these districts: Burlington, River Falls, Shiocton, Waterford, Wilmot, all have referendums. And so next Wednesday, Todd and his guests will talk about the election results, and they'll talk about the reasons why there are so many referendums scheduled for April as well as for next week. And they will remind the people going to vote in these things that for 16 years, the legislature has failed to have public school aid keep up with inflation, and that they are not keeping up at a per pupil level. Now, people will say, wait a minute, wasn't there this big deal with the governor last year to increase aid? Yeah, but so much of it went to voucher schools. For public schools, the change in state aid per pupil went up $325. If they were to have kept up with inflation all these years, just keep up with inflation, no other big increase, you would have had to make up the per pupil amount. It would have had to be about $3,300 on top of the $16,000 per pupil that it roughly costs now to educate a child in Wisconsin. You'd have to have $3,300 to keep up with inflation. Instead, public schools are getting about $300. Well, except the voucher schools. Voucher high schools are getting about $3,300 extra in state aid per pupil through the voucher program, about $1,500 for voucher schools. And so that's why there are so many referenda, because school districts are working to try to keep up with inflation. And so that is why there will be some elections next week, some on April 2nd, and why we'll also, when I get back, be talking about Public Schools Week, which will be 2 weeks from now, talking about the reasons why we support public schools and should continue to, and stand up to those who are continually trying to dismantle public education in the state of Wisconsin. We'll continue unpacking the news in just a bit here, and then Mark Jacob and Dan Schumacher still ahead. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this cold but beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is a birthday boy, James Ingram, who's 72 today.
Your face is beaming.
If you missed it in the last hour, I already spoke at length about the breaking news about the death of Alexei Navalny, the Russian opposition leader, who was not leading any kind of a violent insurrection, was trying to work within the existing institutions, drew thousands of people to his rallies, people in Russia who did not want a dictator ruling them. And now he's dead at the age of 47. If you missed our last hour and want to hear those comments, we turn every hour of our Civic Media talk shows into a podcast form. So there's a podcast for the 6 a.m. hour, a podcast for the 7 a.m. hour. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more about the stations, about the shows, and get subscribed to listen as a podcast. Donald Trump could find out as early as today whether he's going to pay an extravagantly high price for a career, a lifetime of business fraud. It took a long time for justice to catch up to Donald Trump. Now he's seeking a run for president as a way to shield himself from the accountability that's been building for years and years. And so I thought it might be a good time to remind folks that there are five. I've always talked about the four trials of Donald Trump. There's actually five counting this one. This is a civil trial, not a criminal trial. So Trump's not going to go to prison for this one. But he could be fined to a point where basically he would lose much or all of his business. The New York Attorney General is seeking a $370 million fine because of all the illegal ways that Trump inflated his wealth on financial statements that were given to banks, insurance companies, and others to make deals and secure loans. Now, again, the people who like to defend Trump say, well, that's just normal. People inflate the value of something when they're trying to sell it, and they minimize the value of something when they're getting taxed on it. You can give the everybody does it defense if you want, but you'd have a hard time arguing that there isn't some level of lying about those values that constitutes fraud. And that's what a court has found Trump did. He did this to the point that it was a criminal act, and did it so often and to such a value that in this civil trial, he is facing the possibility of this $370 million fine, which could end with him having to turn over some of his businesses that he had been running fraudulently. And then there are the other ones. Now, there's one that had some sex appeal to it yesterday. It's all about the Georgia elections case, and the focus yesterday was on the district attorney down there, Fannie Willis, and whether she was engaged in an improper or at least unseemly romantic relationship with another attorney there. And so there was plenty of salacious and confrontational testimony yesterday. And while that's all good for TV ratings, and the cable networks love to play that yesterday, let's not lose sight of what the trial is actually about. It is about Donald Trump, the sitting president of the United States, calling top officials in the state of Georgia saying, I need you to find so many votes. A sitting president tampering with the election results in Georgia. He's facing trial for that, whatever happens with Fannie Willis one way or another. And people may want to point fingers at Fannie Willis and accuse her of recklessness and really try to make the most of the sex that's maybe involved in this case. I would refer you to one of the other Trump trials, which would be the hush money case in New York, where Donald Trump had an affair with a porn star, had a liaison with a Playboy centerfold, and gave hush money to them while he was running against Hillary Clinton to keep them quiet. Or in the case of the Playmate, the money went to the National Enquirer, which told the Playmate, yeah, we'll tell your story about Donald Trump. And then they killed the story because they were actually in cahoots with Trump. That all would be one thing, except then Trump falsified his business records to cover up the hush money payments. So again, it's about business fraud with this guy. And so that's what one of the New York criminal trials is about. Then there's the federal election tampering case. That's the one with special counsel Jack Smith. That's the one that's currently parked at the U.S. Supreme Court, not for the charges, but because Trump is again claiming he's a king, that presidents should be treated like kings. Even when they're no longer in office, they should have total immunity from any kind of prosecution. And the U.S. Supreme Court is being asked to decide, does that sit well as a defense or not? And hopefully they see through this and say, no, you can't claim total immunity. And then it goes back to actually holding the trial on federal election tampering charges, as opposed to the Georgia election tampering charges. And then finally, there's the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case, where again, national security secrets were stored recklessly in cardboard boxes in bathrooms at Mar-a-Lago. And when Trump was asked repeatedly to give them back, he said, no, they're mine. They're not his. They belong to the American people. That trial should really be moving along where he's facing accountability. But a Trump-appointed judge, Eileen Cannon, is on the case and is working hard to defend Trump as the judge in the case. When last I heard about that case, she was actually telling Jack Smith that she would not protect the names of sensitive witnesses in the case. Sensitive witnesses who could talk about the national security secrets that were in those classified documents. So again, you've got the Georgia election tampering case. You've got the federal election tampering case. You've got the New York hush money case. You've got the New York business practices case, where we could learn about the fine today, and the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case. Five different things that Trump is treating like a five-ring campaign circus. He's using each one of those to stand outside the courtroom like he did this week again and rail about the conditions in the court and the crime-infested cities where these courts are, and he's a victim, and it's all part of the deep state. And for those folks who want to believe in the cult of personality and feel like he's being persecuted, I guess you're free to do that. But you're also free to look at the details of each case. And if you look at the details of each case, of what he did, of just that Georgia phone call alone, of just the photo of classified documents in a bathroom alone, if you're upset with Fannie Willis, just the thought of Trump having an affair with a porn star as Melania's home with their new baby, just that alone might make you think that there's more to this than just, you know, the deep state. There's a new evening lineup across the Civic Media Radio Network. Busted Pencils is now a five-night-a-week show, 6 o'clock. It's as they bill themselves educated educators, talking attention, talking let me try that again. Boy, Greg, I need to go on vacation. It's educated educators talking about education, which I clearly need. Tim and Johnny cover a variety of issues, and they will be joining us week after next to talk about the show. 7 p.m. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba and 9 p.m. Native Roots Radio. And Mark Jacob standing by to talk to us about media coverage of the week's big stories after this. You're up north.
UK.
The beat goes on. The beat goes on.
Sonny Bono, Bono on this day in 1935. Passed away in 1998 as we continue on this Friday morning, 7:35 on this February 16th. Nice to have you along here on Up North News Radio, where I'm joined, as always, on Friday mornings at this time by Mark Jacob down in Chicago. Mark, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Good, good. We have spoken in the past year about, in our last segment, about Trump's many trials. We're going to get to that. But the other big news of the day is the mysterious but unfortunately not so surprising death of Alexei Navalny, Putin's really last only remaining political critic. And I can't help but think about Trump's attorney being asked in court, are you saying that Trump could have one of his political opponents assassinated and not face criminal charges? And Trump's attorney saying in so many words, yeah, unless he was impeached by the Senate, which is now a fully partisan body, that couldn't happen. This news should, I don't think it will, but it should cause a lot of people to think twice about what America's future would look like if Trump were to get in again.
Yeah, I mean, it's really clear to me that Trump considers Putin and Xi of China as role models, not adversaries. You know, he wants what they have. And that's, really the frightening thing we need to face up to. It is that, you know, if he was in charge, you know, he would, there are a lot of things he's already said he would do, you know, that he would send troops into American cities uninvited, that he would send the Department of Justice after his enemies, which basically is what Putin did with Navalny. When you see the Republican Party, so many members, Ron Johnson, Tommy Tuberville, saying all these like sweet things about Putin, you know that they would support that, that they would support Trump doing horrible things like that.
And that includes, you know, Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, who we played his audio a day or two ago, saying about Ukraine, you know, Putin will not lose. Putin will not lose when Yesterday was the 35th anniversary of the Soviet Union pulling out of Afghanistan. There is, history is filled with examples of, you know, where if you can wear somebody down on one battlefield, they won't spread to other battlefields. Ron Johnson should know better than that. And I really have a feeling that if and when he makes comment on today's events, it's going to be along the lines of, you know, Navalny had it coming. He should have just, you know, rolled over.
Well, Pat, my theory is that Ron Johnson will be having a very important phone call and will have the phone next to his ear as he walks past reporters. And he'll just be too busy with that phone call to actually comment on, you know, the apparent murder of Navalny in custody. You know, but the thing about the about Ukraine and why Ron Johnson's position on that is so awful is, have we looked at history at all? I mean, have we looked at what happened when Neville Chamberlain decided to give away Czechoslovakia to Hitler? That was going to solve everything. Everything was going to be fine. If we let the dictator take his neighboring country, he'll stop there, because that's all he wants, right? Well, you know, we know that doesn't work. It's been proven it doesn't work. And when you look at Ukraine is a bargain for the United States. Us giving billions of dollars to Ukraine to fight the Russians is a bargain, because they're doing it, not us. You know, and do we want to have a hot war in Europe, in NATO countries, because we rolled over and let Putin take Ukraine?
Right. For those folks that think it's somehow in a vacuum, like we could have made the choice just not to help Ukraine and, you know, that Putin would have stopped right there. You know, you're fooling yourself.
Right.
And so I want to take it to now to another aspect of this pro-Russia faction in the U.S., not just among politicians, but amongst media. But before I do that, I want to address one comment that came in on the text line just now. And it's directed more toward me, but I want to take care of it right here. He writes, you know, why do you focus on Trump so much? We all know he's uses a bad word here. This station is no different than right-wing goofiness. Be different. Focus on good things Biden is doing and has done for the people. Hold him up. I've been a moderate Dem for 40 years, but I'm rethinking my position this fall. Your show is not helping my disapproval of Biden's policies. To which I would say, first off, thank you for taking the time to text. I really actually do appreciate that. I want people hold us honest, but right. By the same token, we have and will continue to talk about things that Biden has done, I would argue, more so than a lot of other media outlets, and will continue to. But this week's events, you know, take us in that direction, especially, Pat said, redirecting the conversation, when you have people like Tucker Carlson doing pro-Russian propaganda about how well the subways run and what a great guy Putin is. That's not helping.
You know, and I'm a student of history, and so that reminded me right away of Walter Duranty, who I don't know if most of your listeners know who that is. That's the former New York Times correspondent in Moscow during the Stalin years. And he won a Pulitzer Prize, actually, which the New York Times has not ever given back. But it was later made obvious that Duranty was doing Soviet propaganda, was, you know, touting Russia, touting the Soviet Union, and Stalin is great, and covering up the terror famine in Ukraine. Because in the 1930s, and that's another thing, Pat, is that history is so important to explain the present to us. And in the 1930s, Stalin systematically starved millions of Ukrainians as part of his collectivization program.
Literally, I want to underscore that. He literally starved the country. Right. He confiscated all of the crops, and so many people died back then. Yeah, there's history here.
Right. Right. And Walter Duranty of the New York Times covered it up and said it was overblown. It really didn't happen. And, you know, and so this idea of Americans going over to Russia and doing their propaganda for them, you know, has a precedent. It's ridiculous to see Tucker Carlson say, oh, look at this great grocery store in Moscow and look at this train station, you know, and the timing is really, you know, stark here. So you have Putin sending his chief rival to prison for no reason, and then him suddenly turning up dead. And boy, they got great grocery stores in Moscow. I mean, it's just Tucker Carlson is finally gone to a very horrible place, and I hope he stays there.
And look, let's not beat around the bush on this. Tucker Carlson, you know, is a white nationalist at best, a white supremacist at worst. And when he says, look how clean these cities are and look how clean these subways are, he's all but blowing the dog whistle to say, look, there are no black people here. You know, he wants to make that case, and some of us are going to call him out on it. Meanwhile, over on Fox News, you've got Sean Hannity, who, as you rightly note and retweeting Matt Gaetz, you know, he has been almost nonstop talking about this informant who's going to blow the whistle on Joe Biden. Right. And, well, now this informant has been charged with lying, to which a whole lot of us would say, what took so long?
Right. This is like the chief whistleblower, supposedly, that was going to make that James Comer's case work in the House, you know, to go after Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. And, you know, and it was just hours and hours of discussion on Fox News about how, though, this was the big guy who was going to do it. And turns out the guy was just making it up. And now he's been charged with lying to the FBI. And, you know, what are you going to see from Fox News, Pat? Do you figure they're going to spend hours and hours talking about, oh, we were wrong, and we're sorry we said all those lies about Joe Biden? I don't think so. And you know what? It's abundantly clear that Fox News doesn't care what the truth is. In fact, they paid $750 million, you know, because of that in a court case last year. So they don't care. And it's one of those things where, if they can get the propaganda out there and just flood the zone with that, they don't care if they, you know, I'm not even sure they're going to correct this. But if they do correct it, it'll be seconds. It will not be hours.
Yeah, exactly. They got what they wanted out of it. And then right. There is absolutely not any level of, you know, accountability. And for those folks who would have the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, the deep state got to this guy too, I would say what I said about all the Trump trial cases. Look past that talking point and actually look at the evidence. Look right. at what has happened and look at, again, the lack of any actual evidence of either a Biden crime or election, you know, irregularities, as the word that they love to use. It's not there because it's not there. So to take it to all the many Trump trials that we recapped in our last segment, all five legal cases that he's facing. You and I both noticed yesterday, they started out with the split screen. You know, here's the New York courthouse with the business trial. Here's the Atlanta one. Well, the Atlanta one has, you know, some salacious, you know, sex angle to it. So no more split screen. Bring Atlanta up full, and we're just going to run court audio for the next, you know, several hours, because we're talking about sex rather than Trump trying to interfere in the Georgia election.
Yeah, plus they had cameras in the courtroom, and that's the kind of thing that you know, that TV loves and needs, you know. So, but it's, you know, it's really a shame. And Fannie Willis, you know, again, Pat, this is the whole thing that I feel like your radio audience and you and me, we want to be reality based, and Fannie Willis, is it great that she had a sexual relationship with, in effect, her employee? No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that those kind of things should be avoided in the workplace, and so this is not, so nobody's saying, oh, she's perfect, she did everything right. But let's get real about it. And she said it very bluntly in court yesterday. She said, I'm not on trial. The person who's on trial is the person who tried to steal the 2020 election. And hello, that's right. You know, but the sad thing is that, you know, the Trump people are doing everything possible to delay, and to just throw kind of, you know, bizarre red herrings in it. To me, you know, just based on testimony yesterday, I don't see how they kicked the prosecutors off this case. And the thing about it is, if they did kick the prosecutors off this case, they'd get new prosecutors because the evidence is solid. So really what they're fighting for is delay. They're just fighting to get through the election so that Trump can be a dictator and make all this go away.
That's right. That's what this has been about from the very beginning. You pass along some reporting from Nancy Levine at Hill Reporter, and this is about Twitter, X, whatever that Elon Musk right. has turned it into, who claimed that, you know, again, having his big brain, he would be able to have more freedom of speech, translation, more Nazis, But, right. you know, advertisers didn't have to worry about that. It appears they do have to worry about that.
Yeah. Nancy, she's an independent freelance reporter, but she's been on this case. And it's kind of hard work because, you know, the Twitter people won't talk to her probably. And but she's been, what she's been doing is just looking what's happening on Twitter, which is, and I've done the same thing, which is go to accounts of people you know are anti-Semitic or racist and see what advertisers show up on their accounts next to those horrible posts of hate. And what you find is that there's some mainstream advertisers that, you know, their stuff shows up right next to, you know, some Hitler content. And you have to, and what she's doing is she's contacting the advertisers and saying, how do you feel about this? And some of them are saying, well, I don't control that, whatever. But I think the net result is that some of these advertisers are going to flee Twitter, and they should flee Twitter. Cause this is, what kind of service is this to an advertiser? If you're going to put them next to Adolf Hitler. I mean, it's nuts. And the fact that Adolf Hitler is all over Twitter now anyway is shocking. I mean, I don't know how active you are on Twitter, but I'm quite active. And the number of neo-Nazis who have shown up in my comments is just, you know, double, tripled, quadrupled since Elon Musk took over.
It is. It just said. Just a few seconds to tell us, if you head over to stopthepresses.news, what's new on Media Misses, you and your esteemed partner there?
Yeah, another guy who does a newsletter, Stephen Beschloss, and I got together just to kind of do something called Media Misses, which is a short, like 4 or 5 minute video where mostly every week we look at something that happened in the news coverage. And this one is about The Hill, which is kind of a garbage publication anyway, but actually gets a lot of web traffic. And they wrote a story about Jared Kushner, and it was all about Kushner's not going to rejoin the White House. Mm-hmm. But they forgot to mention Kushner's $2 billion deal with the Saudis. They didn't mention Jamal Khashoggi and how Kushner was helping the Saudis cover that up.
Seems noteworthy. Head over to stopthepresses.news. Oh, man. Mark, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Dan Schumacher's back, which means he and Greg get to dance along to their favorite Grateful Dead tunes, which today Mr. Schumacher would be what?
I'm going to let Greg answer that one. He played it.
All right,
which
Greg.
Which version and what year?
This is Crazy Fingers off of Blues for Allah.
Blues for Allah.
1975.
Yep.
Very nice.
Who's going to the Sphere? Greg, are you going to the Sphere?
I would love. I can't. I want to so bad. I think I'm going to save my money for when Fish goes.
Okay. All right. Well, I get a chance. Because I'm a lucky guy.
Yes, you are.
I have to go to Vegas.
You have to.
He has to.
For work.
Okay. We know. You work.
I'm going to book on both sides.
Okay.
The 8th or the 9th and the 13th.
Oh, it's so cool. Please take pictures if you can. I don't know if they'll allow.
Oh, he does. We get the texts. He texts the videos like right away of the band playing. And oh, yeah. He's going to have a great time. But before he can get there, we got to cover things happening in the world. Greg and I have already covered a couple of times our dissatisfaction with, you know, how Doc Rivers is handling the Bucks. He's gone 3-7 now after losing in Memphis last night, 113-110. But now we've got the All-Star break, which maybe that's the thing. Dan, you'd know better than the rest of us if All-Star breaks in some of the big sports, that kind of a rest, if that does you any good, or does Doc Rivers just have more work to do that he hasn't done yet?
I think Doc Rivers became so disruptive in the middle of a season with the previous head coach. You know, I have a theory that, like, just even this past year for me, I hired 8 new head coaches, but 3 of them were interim, and it was to become less disruptive, keeping the assistant coach as the head coach that kept the congruity of your roster. To go full about face with Doc Rivers, to me, was so disruptive, even for an all-star like Giannis, is disruptive. And that affects wins and losses. As much as you know that Doc Rivers may get you to the promised land eventually, it was disruptive for this particular time until everybody adjusted to his coaching style.
Sure.
And so that's my take on it. I think Giannis is, you know, I think the Bucks are going to make a run eventually as soon as Doc Rivers figures out what is his lineup, what is his substitutions. Substitutions in the pros is huge. So, you know, I think Doc will get it done. It's just disruptive right now.
Okay. College basketball, we haven't mentioned this yet today. Caitlin Clark didn't just break the single season scoring record, but I believe that shot was, as it says on the t-shirts these days, from the logo.
From the logo, which is 40 feet.
Yeah.
40 feet. She broke the record 40 feet. She came across the half court line,
mm-hmm.
pulled up, boom.
Just drains it.
I mean, she's an amazing, amazing basketball player, mm-hmm. an amazing student athlete. And there's a female athlete that's making a hell of a lot of money on NIL.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, people are like, well, you know, why don't you leave after a year or two and go to the WNBA? The WNBA is not paying what name, image, licensing deals are giving college students these days.
Could it be someone like her, or what's her counterpart's name? The one that she played against last year, Angel Reese.
Yes.
Could they be the ones who go to the WNBA and say, "Pay me"? There's got to be someone who doesn't.
Some of the greatest basketball players have now played female-wise, you know, the Catchings girls, everybody. But they're not making the money that Caitlin's going to. She's the great white hope.
Yeah, I mean, she.
I mean, for lack of better terms, and I don't like that term, but it is true, a white girl in the WNBA, just like Bird was, is a commodity that they can invest in these advertisers.
Yeah.
And that's the business of sports. In men's college basketball, now we talk at length about the Badgers, who are 20th ranked. They're at Iowa on Saturday. You can hear their games on many Civic Media radio stations and on the app. But it's the Marquette men who are ranked fourth in the nation, an 8-game win streak, taking that into UConn tomorrow. You probably watch these teams more than I do to tell me if Marquette is the real deal or if they're just going through a nice little 8-game win streak here.
You know, I would have said yes, Pat, in the beginning of the season, the way they were playing, and then they went on a little bit of a slump, especially right when they played the Badgers one-on-one. I think Greg Gard has a more bigger issue than Shaka does. As far as from a recruitment standpoint, who's got more to lose, the Badgers or Marquette? That's what you really got to ask yourself when it comes to college basketball in this state. At the same time, I'm going to give props to UW Green Bay. Even though they lost the other night to Northern Kentucky, they're still in the lead in the Horizon League. So you could argue that, you know, Wisconsin's a pretty good basketball state in many different ways.
Oh, yeah.
Even though Gard is going over to Lakeville, Minnesota, and raiding the whole high school team over there.
Hey, you go where the fertile ground is right now. Right. The Badger women will host Penn State on Sunday. The Marquette women host Seton Hall next Tuesday. I got to get to hockey here because the fourth-ranked Badger men are at Ohio State tonight and tomorrow afternoon. The second-ranked Badger women have a 13-game win streak, and they are hosting the Gophers this weekend and Ohio State the next weekend. But I got to get to Division III women. River Falls, 24-0 with one game to go at your old stomping grounds, UW-Eau Claire, tomorrow to go for a perfect season. That's pretty cool.
They're the number one seed. The NCAA has moved to a different scientific thing called pairwise.
Yes.
And that is the rankings. So by far, River Falls is number one pairwise, be the number one seed in the NCAA tournament in a couple weeks. But, you know, Eau Claire's right, Eric Strand. Great guy, great coach, is right there with them. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, man. It's really interesting. You have to understand that the WIAC, where River Falls is, they're a non-AQ league. they don't have enough. They don't have six teams. So with five teams, okay, you become a, what they call a pool B or a pool C bid. And right, never in history of the hockey playoffs has a pool B per team been the number one seed without having the AQ. So it's a very interesting dynamic.
Let's pick up on that in 2 weeks when I get back here. Thank you so much, Dan. Have a great weekend.
Peace, brothers.
Thank you.
Peace,
thank,
my friend.
Thank you, Greg, for your infinite patience today. Chad Holmes always here Monday, Tuesday. Todd Alba, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Have a great weekend. See you again soon.